everyone, and welcome to another episode of EuroHoopPod, the official podcast of EuroHoops. I'm Adonis Strogilakis. As usually, I'm joined by my great colleague, Cesare Milanti. And tonight, we have a really great, special, unique kind of a guest that you can see in front of you. This guy is one of the most successful American players who ever competed in EuroLeague. Three-time EuroLeague champion with Panathinaikos. Dozens, numerous domestic league titles and individual distinctions. One of the OGs, maybe the OG when it comes to the whole undersized center thing that became popular in EuroLeague from the mid-zeros and onward. A legend of EuroLeague basketball by now, Mike Batiste. Mike, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I am the OG to the small ball. Trust me. You know what I mean? Everybody now who's playing a small ball, all say, Mike, we got it from you. We saw you. So it's a big honor to have that.
We're going to talk about this thing. You know, it's funny. Before we begin to the normal flow of the conversation, some also mentioned Daryl Middleton from Panathinaikos being.
Well, he was my Jedi master. Daryl was my Jedi master. I was his Padawan.
So you were the Darth Vader, and he was the Obi-Wan.
Yeah. But remember, you know, the teacher, you know what I'm saying, eventually passed the master. So, you know, Daryl was a big help for me because, as you guys know the story, I didn't come to Panathinaikos to play the center position, a five spot.
Yeah, you were a three.
So right. And, you know, when the transition was being made for me to slide down to the power forward, to slide down to the center, the first person I got with was Daryl Middleton, because at that time he was an undersized center, right? He knew every tricks of the trade. He knew how to use his body. He knew how to seal bigger guys in the paint and open up angles for him to score, open up an angle for a guard to drive the ball to the rim. So there was a lot of nuances that Daryl taught me. And then with my talent, my IQ, my athleticism, I just enhanced everything that he taught me. So, you know, big props to Daryl Middleton. I really wouldn't be the player that people know about if it wasn't for Daryl Middleton.
Yeah, Daryl Middleton, for those who don't know, another great of Panathinaikos, won the EuroLeague with the Greece in 2002 in Bologna. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your current job, basically. So everyone knows you are an assistant coach at the Toronto Raptors. You guys just beat the Charlotte Hornets, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, now, we just won the other day.
Yeah, and you are 11-15. Can you give us a small assessment of the team's run so far? How pleased or maybe not pleased you are with it? What do you think?
No, we're very pleased with what we have, of course. You know, there's times where other teams have more than us. They probably have more shooting. They probably have more talent. But at the end of the day, you can't be afraid of what you don't have. You know, you come in here, you prepare with the game plan. You walk the guys through. You make them confident on what's going to happen tonight. And then we'll play as hard as we can for 48 minutes. Tonight, we got a very, very tough matchup because we have, you know, the NBA champions coming here, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray. Very tough night for us tonight, but we're going to give it our best. We're going to, you know, throw different defenders at Jokic. We're going to mix up different coverages on him. And hopefully that'll keep us, tight into the game to where, you know, the last 5-6 minutes of the game, anything can go. So, you know, it's going to be tough, but we're at home. We have our crowd behind us, and we should play well today because a lot of guys do play well at home than they do on the road.
So do you like set a ceiling for the team this season, the goal of Toronto for this season?
We really haven't set a ceiling. And honestly, when you get on a team, you never want to really set a certain ceiling because a lot of things can happen before that ceiling, right? Injuries and other things may happen. So we try to make small goals, right? We try to get guys to shoot the ball better. We try to get guys to operate out of the system better, where they're going to catch the ball, whether that's in a corner of the three-point line, the wing of the three-point line. If they're catching the ball at the elbow, certain scoring areas, we try to give them every option as possible. So when they catch the ball, they're not holding it. You know, everybody talk about this 0.5 offense, moving the ball, which is the king here all over the world of basketball, because you never want to have a stagnant offense that only helps the defense when you're just in a stationary position. So we're trying to really preach a lot of ball movement, a lot of body movement, cutting, because there are some things that we don't have that a lot of other teams have. So sharing a ball and moving body parts has been a really big staple for us. And if you look at the stats, we're top five in assists. So we're moving the ball very well. The thing is, we got to make shots when we, get those wide open threes or wide open jump shots.
Yeah, and the NBA remains a shooter's league, of course. It's
always will.
So you joined the Raptors with Darko Rajakovic, the second coach, who European-born head coach in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
After Igor Kokoskov, you yourself, of course, had this kind of rich and very successful experience playing in Europe. So I can't help but ask, he asked you to join the team. Was one of the reasons your European experience that special, unique element that you might bring on board because of that?
Of course. I've been, well, this would be my 10th year. I've been with seven different teams, right? And seven different teams is like what I brought to the table, right? It's been my background, my European career, how I teach bigs, to screen, roll, to defend, and in general, just how, pick and roll offense should be operated, with the spacing, with the cutting, with the certain ball handler, with the certain screen and roller, the lob threat. So all my ideals that I ever had when I was a player are being brought to fruition here with the Toronto Raptors, but also the other teams that I work with as well. And I've been very, very happy with, my progress, where I'm going, and it's only going to get better from here.
I was reading that part of your job was focus on the big men, and one of the mm-hmm. big men on the team is your all-star, Pascal Siakam.
Mm-hmm.
What parts from your career, what experience from your career, what lessons that you got from your playing career do you teach Pascal Siakam and those guys?
Well, it all depends. After a game, you always sit back and watch video so you can make the right corrections, because sometimes things that you see in a game are totally different than what you see on video. So from my experience, it could be for him passing the ball. He could have two on the ball, and it could be a simple pass. He could be wide open and he will hesitate on a jump shot. He won't shoot it. So there's certain little nuances that you're trying to give these guys. They already have it already, right? Especially Pascal Siakam, who's a two-time All-Star. He has a really good skill set offensively, defensively. So you're just trying to give him little tricks of the trade that he already knows. And then when he sees that from the video platform, he's one of the few guys that can see what on video and then go right on the court and do what he just saw on a video. So Pascal, again, he's a highly skilled player. It's one guy that we rely on for his leadership. He is an NBA world champion, and he's doing the best that he can right now. And we have no complaints with Pascal. He's been professional throughout the whole ordeal. Saying the new coaching change, new staff, new offense, new defensive philosophy and principles. He's been pretty good with that, and we appreciate that a lot.
And Mike, regardless of the focuses of your jobs as assistant coach, as you reminded mm-hmm. us, you've been with several NBA teams for the past few years. So what things mm-hmm. have you learned from each assistant coaching tenure, if you can name us?
Let's see. Well, most of my time was done with Steve Clifford, who's a very detailed kind of coach. I'm serious. Like, he goes through every pin down, every post up, how to, navigate screens, how to guard the ball handler, how to guard the screener. He had every detail for every situation. So I really, really learned a lot from Steve Clifford. And I still do learn a lot from Steve Clifford, through text messages. I talk with him, when I can. I mean, he's busy as well. We just played him a couple of days ago, so it was good to sit down and pick his brain on a couple of things, because he's so defensive-minded. Like, you can, throw out any scenario out there to Cliff, and we can sit there and brainstorm and come up with a game. My first initial stop, which was Brooklyn, after I got out the G League, with Kenny Atkinson. Kenny had a player development background, turned into head coach, and just like his involvement, his communication with the players, even sometimes jumping in drills, just to interact with them a certain way. I learned a lot from Kenny, learned a lot from Steve Clifford. My time with Washington and Wes Unseld, also learned a lot of patience as well. and also what it's like to be a first-time head coach into a rebuild, right? So this is my, let me see, Darko is my, this would be my third time joining basically a new situation. So I've been here before. My experience from those new situations always are helpful. And, you know, everything that I learned from every head coach that I work for has all been beneficial to the point that I am here right now. So,
of course,
you always take certain things from coaches. Of course, you have your own philosophy. You know, hopefully in time when I'm blessed to be a head coach, I have a vision of how my team should look offensively. I have a vision of how my team should look defensively. And, you know, hopefully, you know, that amount to some good wins and victories. But who knows what the future holds. But when that happened, you know, I'll be ready.
And we talked about Pascal before, what he provides to the team, the talent mm-hmm. he has. But there's another interesting figure in Toronto mm-hmm. since this summer, which is Dennis Schroeder. Who signed with the Raptors in July, and 2 months later he became a world champion with Germany and the MVP of the tournament as like the leader of Gordon's Herbert team. So we saw the amount of confidence he had all throughout that tournament. How has mm-hmm. that helped me going into the season with the team in Toronto?
I mean, having Dennis here has been helpful. I mean, you know, winning a World Cup title, that is, I mean, that's amazing. That's big. And he brings that wealth of experience to our team because we do have a somewhat of an international-based team, right?
Yeah.
So those experience, the whole team, like his teammates, the coaching staff, watching what he went through this summer, we're only trying to catapult off that momentum that he brought from Germany. Now, again, in this NBA, winning is hard in this league, man. It's very, very hard. And over my course of my career, I've seen guys play some unbelievable games, right? But we still lost. So this association, it's like I said, it's very hard to win. And even when you play at your best, you can still get beaten. That's one of the most difficult, you know, things in this league. But Dennis has been just like Pascal. He's brought the leadership. He has really taken a couple guys under his wing, like Malachi Flynn. Really starting to help his development now because I don't think he had somebody to really put their arm around his shoulder to tell him what to look at in high pick and roll, what to look at in side pick and roll, how to attack and transition, even though Malachi knows. But just to get an added resource behind him like a Dennis Schroeder, who's not also a World Cup champion, but has also played for a lot of other teams in this league. He's been with OKC with Chris Paul, so I'm pretty sure he's learned a lot of things from Chris Paul.
Yeah.
He's also trying to, you know, rub that off onto a Malachi Flynn and also to a Scotty Barnes as well, to all the guys who handles the ball and who's our playmaker, who's our decision makers. He's been really good at that department and trying to help guys see what he sees on the floor. So when they're in those positions, they know how to attack to score or they know how to attack when they draw two on the ball to find an open man.
Yeah.
And from Dennis Schroeder, European guy, let's move slowly to your own European journey. And we have to begin with Panathinaikos. And I'd like to start with, I don't know if you saw it. Did you see what your former teammate, Dimitris Papanikolaou, wrote on your birthday in his LinkedIn? He wrote it in Greek. Did you see it?
Has someone No, I didn't. Oh. No, I didn't.
Well, he says, once upon a time in Greece, an athlete came named Mike Batiste. He was below average in his first season. He didn't play a lot for a foreign guy. It was difficult for him to adjust, and everyone on the team was looking for a replacement. And then Mike makes his self-criticism. He sends a message to the coaching staff, and he says that, give me another chance, and I accept a pay decrease. So... Mm-hmm. He stayed on the team. He became a player who made millions and won things, one of the best in his position in Europe. Sometimes to move forward, you have to go backward. And he ends mm-hmm. his message as happy birthday, Mike Batiste. So that was the happy birthday message in a way for you and also a message for other players, for other aspiring
pros. Yeah, no doubt. That's a great message. Sometimes you got to take 10 steps back to move 2 steps forward. You know, that time of my career, well, I wouldn't say it was difficult, but after, you know, my first year, you know, it was a lot of ups and downs. I battled some injuries. I struggled with the rules, the spacing, the discipline of Obradovich, because there was a way that he coached you to perfection. There's a lot of things I had to get used to, being out of country, family not there. And I was very young and immature on handling those situations. So, you know, after that first season in Panathinaikos, go back home in the summer. I have some NBA offers, but they're really not as up to par of my standards of what I really wanted, right? So I waited all summer. The three teams I was talking to, Atlanta, New Orleans, Orlando, we just did come with an agreement. And so again, like the story said, I called the team back. I said, listen, if you guys would like to have me, I would like to come back. But they was like, it's only one thing, you know, you're gonna have to take a pay decrease, and this is what it is. And I accepted that. My agent, you know, Todd Ealy, thought I was crazy. But I said, listen, man, I know the system, I know the coach, I know what I'm about to get into. So from that standpoint, I have an advantage. So the moment I landed in Athens, I took advantage of every situation that I had. I came in the best shape of my life. My body was healthy. I healed up from the ankle injuries, the hamstring injuries that I had the first year. And I studied a lot more. I mean, you know, growing up as a little kid, everything is on the forefront with the NBA. You know, I grew up in LA watching the Lakers. I've watched tons of, you know, NBA games when I was young, but I had to transform from watching NBA games to watching more European games to know player strength and weaknesses, their tendencies, and what they like to do. You know, if they're grabbing on their shorts mentally, that tells me that they're tired. If they're breathing hard, you know what I mean? They're tired. There's certain little nuances that I started taking to give me an advantage on the court, to also give my teammates an advantage on the court. So the way that I studied and the way that Obradovich and Tudis helped all of us study and become a professional in that aspect of the game only enhanced my skill set, my fundamentals, and my IQ.
Considering that it wasn't easy for you during that first season, you acknowledge that you know Obradovic as a coach, if you are a rookie playing for him, a new guy playing for him, not necessarily young, new to his style of coaching and to his systems and to his discipline, you know, some players may say, no, this is not for me, I'm out. Some players may say that. Some players will recognize, will see some things on Obradovic and see that, okay, this guy can make him, can make me better, can maybe become great. And many players have become great with Obradovic. How easy or difficult was it for you to make that decision, that call during that summer?
Oh, it was difficult. You know, I've had, you know, my run-ins with Obradovich. I've been under his intense pressure to push me through the door, to push me to be better. Again, that was also a maturity situation for me as well, because even my first year, when he would say certain things to provocate me to push better, I would not receive the message very well, you know, because in the NBA, you know, you have a lot of freedom here and you're spoiled here. And a lot of coaches really don't get on you during the game, right? They wait for it at halftime or maybe the next day. You know, you'll call a certain player in the office, you'll sit down and watch video with him as an individual. But this is the first time I've ever been kind of, you know, called out in front of the team for certain situations. And my first year, I didn't like it. But the second year, I took it as a challenge, you know, and everything that Obradovich and Tudis put me up against, whether it was difficult or not, I took the challenge and I tried to run with it, whether I succeeded or failed. I succeeded more times than I failed, but
Definitely.
he challenged me in every situation. And once I was able to us to the best of our ability, and we answered every test that he put out in front of us, and I think that's the reason why we was, you know, so successful.
When in the rare occasions that Zeljko Obradovic was a free agent during some summers, especially before he joined the Partizan, there was this question. Why is he not in the NBA? Why is he not coaching in the NBA? You know, Zeljko Obradovic has told some part of this. This is his side on why he hasn't coached in the NBA. For example, he said that they tell me to go through an interview, and I say to them, I give interview to journalists, not teams. For example, that's part of the story. But Do you think that Zeljko Obradovic, considering his character, also, you know, the way he likes his discipline, the way he speaks to players sometimes in timeouts, I'm not saying that necessarily he would act like that way in the NBA, but do you think that he could have become a head coach in the NBA?
No doubt. Listen, Obradovic is a freaking genius, man. And for 30 teams to not consider him to be a head coach for a team, I don't know, you know, what that situation is. But
sorry
I will
to interrupt
tell
you. Maybe the right question is not if he would become, maybe if he would succeed as a head coach in the NBA.
No doubt he will. Yeah. Listen, he's the guru of pick and roll. There are things that I see a lot of NBA teams are doing now, even some plays that we run with Toronto right now. And we was doing that back in 2006, 2007, 2008. So to see Obradovic's blueprint on the pick and roll game, which, right, where basketball has gone, he's the catalyst of that. And for any team to not consider him to not coach, that's crazy in itself. But I would say this, for a team to hire Obradovic, right, you're going to have to draft or you're going to have to sign, trade for strong character, mentally tough, because you can't give Obradovic or arm him with the certain tools of mentally weak players. Those players are not for him. You got to have strong basketball character, strong team character. You have to be mentally tough. He's going to challenge you mentally. He's not going to challenge you physically. He knows your heart, your drive, your discipline, your determination. He knows your skill set. But the game is so mental, right? You have to focus on so many different things, the pace and speed of the game, the way guys cut, the way guys screens, the way guys come off of pick and roll to shoot to drive. He's the master in all that, right? And again, for any NBA team that hires him, you better make sure you have 15 to 17 tough, strong-minded kind of players that will handle that situation.
And moving on to the present of Panathinaikos, they're trying to make like new beginnings, to have new beginnings, to return to glory days eventually. And they went big everywhere, big signing, big budget, big head coach, considering the fact that he won back-to-back EuroLeague titles with Efes. Now they had quite some ups and downs. What do you think of the team now? They're following them. What do you think of Pana?
Listen, they're doing great considering what happened, you know, in years past, or 3-4 years. They're fine, right? What, they're 7-7, I think.
7-7 tonight, the Pace Monaco, yeah. So they may be 8-7 when we publish this podcast.
But regardless of what the result is, 8-7, 7-8, they wasn't at this position a couple of years ago, so they are fine, right? The EuroLeague, I'm pretty sure, just like the NBA, very hard to win games now, right? Everybody plays everybody. There's no more group play, pool play. You can't hide from certain teams no more. You have to go through the gauntlet. And what they're doing now, like I said, is good. They got the head coach, right? Ottoman back-to-back champion. There's a start there. Then with all the big signing with Lesord and Hernan Gomez, the list goes on and on. They are right where they're supposed to be. I believe they're going to be in a playoffs or play in, however that happens. And I really believe we're going to see Panathinaikos fighting for a Final Four spot this year. So I'm hoping that they make the playoffs so I can have a little vacation. So I can come over to Athens. I can see everybody, my brothers and people that I admire and love and respect a lot. And I can also, you know, catch a couple basketball games. So I'm definitely keeping my fingers crossed that, you know, they continue to make the right strides, which they are. And hopefully, you know, when the season's over with, they are slotted in one of those spots to where they're, again, they're fighting for a Final Four position.
You mentioned Lesort among the players who are shining with Pana, and he's being huge for them, considering the fact that he put himself on top of the fives in the EuroLeague with Zeljko Obradovic. What do you think about his progression so far in the competition?
It's been nothing but remarkable. Like you said, we saw the transition for him and Partizan under Obradovic. He's taken those lessons, you know, to Panathinaikos, and he's playing very, very well. I mean, the few times that I've saw Panathinaikos play, he's been outstanding. Been, you know, kind of checking on stats and other little things when I can't catch games. To me, he's been one of the, you know, the best centers in the competition. So for that to, you know, transition to happen under Obradovic and to bring that to Panathinaikos under Ottoman, it's a beautiful picture that we're seeing right now. And I hope that it continues the trend in the right direction, because he's one of the main focal points, one of the big signings. And the people, even the coaching staff, the fans of Panathinaikos are expecting a lot for him. And I think right now he's doing a good job at it.
For sure.
Mike, you won, as everyone knows, won the EuroLeague with Pana 2007, 2009, 2011, year by year. Now, each of those teams had a couple of differences, different key players that were on one team and weren't on the other team. Ziskauskas, Saras, Panulis, Pekovic. You were one of those people who was present on all those teams. Which one, which of those editions of Panathinaikos was your favorite?
Which one of my editions? When we signed Peko.
Tell me which one of those editions was your favorite. But my question was also, which one of these editions of Panathinaikos, the 2017, the 2009, or 2011 team, was your favorite?
2009. Okay. And I know a lot of people say, oh, that's the best team. And I think it is too. But 2009 was, I mean, it was an unbelievable year for us. Of course, like you said, the roster that we had with Yaskevicius, Dimitridis, Spanouli, me, Pekovic, Fotsi, Tsatsaris. I mean, you look on paper and you're like, yeah, they're winning the championship, everything. But we didn't start that way. And actually, I wouldn't actually say we started bad, but we didn't start with the level of expectation that everybody thought that we was going to do, right? Because in 2007, I remember we ran off like 14, 15 games in a row, and everybody said, oh, shoot, like, this is a well-oiled machine. We should see this team in the Final Four. When 2009 started, everybody had those same expectations, but we didn't start well. I remember losing a Greek home game to Marusi. I remember that very next week we lose a game to Panellinios. We was in a very, very difficult spot to where either we're going to go south and keep losing games, or we're going to go north and keep winning games. And from that little debate or whatever we had in the locker room, I would say it was a very, very heated discussion, because we lost to a team that we wasn't supposed to lose to. And in the month of February, where the top 16 are the most difficult games, and you also have your cup game, we was mentally in a very bad spot. And I think from that locker room altercation, you know, everybody just, you know, we took a day off. We came back to the next day with a different kind of focus, right? And a different type of mentality. And we attacked every single practice as if it was a game. And from those practices, it carried over to the game, and it carried over to another game. And I think that year, the month of February, we won every single game except the game in Seth, where we lose at the buzzer to Olympiacos. So we saw the actual turning point after that loss to Panellinios. Winning 11 out of 12 games in the month of February only gave us the momentum to carry forward. So the 2009 team was a very, very, very special team. You know, Drew Nicholas was on that team. He's a really good friend of mine, still a good friend of mine. We talk almost daily, you know. His job with the Denver Nuggets, you know, he's been doing a really good job in the front office over there. Stratos Papelu was on that team. We had, again, a really good roster. And for any situation, you want to play fast, you want to play slow, small, big, I felt we had the roster to match up with anybody in Europe.
You talked about the locker room altercation that happened. Mm-hmm. When exactly during that season?
We lost the Greek League game to Panellinios. And I remember, you know, Obradovic, he was not talking about the game. I'll tell you that. He was talking about some more personal stuff. And then after Obradovic finished talking, guess who comes in? The Nasi comes in. So that's a little bit, yeah, because, you know.
The Typhoon Thanasis, for those who don't know his nickname, the Typhoon.
Right. Yeah, he's, yeah. Yeah, and he comes through the door, and yeah, you might think he's, you know, this small, but when he walks through the door, he's this big, and he's going after every single player, telling him what they should do, what blah, 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 and these are the consequences. So, you know, again, like I said, we all took in as much information, you know, as we did. I took in all the information that was directed towards me. I'm pretty sure every player took the information that was directed towards them. We've had the day off. We came back the next day. We had a total a different focus on practice. Like the very first warm-up, we was going at 100% because we knew we had to get to it. We knew the pressure that was among us. We knew how everybody was looking at this team to win. And with those type of pressure, we just attacked it with every single practice, and it carried over to the game.
So, Thanasis Giannakopoulos' visit at the locker room was a kind of a game changer for you that season. Essentially,
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what you're telling me. And you give me also the pass to ask you this question. Thanasis Giannakopoulos and Pavlos Giannakopoulos, the late Pavlos Athanasis Giannakopoulos, legends of the club, legends of European basketball when it comes to executives. Actually, long-time presidents of Panathinaikos, the family essentially made Panathinaikos the dynasty that they became with the six EuroLeague titles apart from so many domestic trophies. These two people were very close to the team because also they were huge and passionate fans to the team. It wasn't just two people who were, you know, putting money on the team. They had genuine passion for the team. What's your fondest memory of the Giannakopoulos brothers?
I just think their undying support was the most thing that I remember. You know, you also have to remember we didn't win a EuroLeague title every single year. We had disappointments, we had certain adversities. You know, me personally, like you said, like after my first year, I think I'm not going to be here. Then, you know, the year in 2007, I remember telling myself personally, if we don't win a yearly championship, I probably won't be here next year. So there's a lot of different things that as a player you thought about, but I think the common support that we got for both of them, even though Thanasi was a little bit more hands-on, a little more pushy, probably getting your face a little bit more, their undying support was a big help for all of us. Their undying support for me personally was big because from America, I have my family here. I don't have the big support system in terms of mother, brother, sister, and certain things that I can say to them because they know who I am. I didn't have that, right? So to have the certain support of Pavlos to come in and ask about my family, how's my mother's doing, how my brother's doing, right? That was big for me, right?
The
Because at
personal
times you think
connection.
that, right? And because at times you really think that nobody really cares about your life, right? You have this contract you sign, you have this obligation to be the best you can be. But do they really care about the actual person and what goes on, like personally in their life? And I had a lot of personal issues, you know, with Panathinaikos, you know, Obradovich Tsourtis and the Giannakopoulos brothers. They was behind me. They put their arms around me. They, of course, they didn't like the situation, but I was one of theirs, and they did whatever they did to help me get out of that situation, so I can just focus on basketball at all costs. So I really, 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 really appreciate you know the help from Thanasi and Pavlos. You know, I miss them dearly. I know a lot of other people miss them dearly because, like you said, their contribution to European basketball, but also to Greek basketball as well, is second to none. And to lose two people like that to the game of basketball, it's a blow. But you know the game goes on. Dimitri Yannakopoulos, you know, this year has did an unbelievable job in terms of getting a good coach, putting a good roster together, and hopefully that'll manifest into, you know, being in the Final Four, hopefully winning the EuroLeague title.
And since you mentioned also Dimitris Giannakopoulos, the son of Pavlos Giannakopoulos, and the nephew of Thanasis, and most people don't realize, especially people in the USA, that when we're talking about owners, presidents of the club in Europe, these are people who basically spend money in a business that is not lucrative. They spend money and they don't expect money back necessarily. They do, it's not a profitable business owning a basketball club in Europe. So they do everything out of their sheer love of the club. And this is also the follow-up with Dimitris Giannakopoulos now.
Right. I mean, they to put so much money into a club, like you said, and not get any, you know, money back like owners do here, that is a deep-rooted love for the sport of basketball. And this is the reason why I felt like the Giannakopoulos brother was so successful, because of their love for the game, not expecting anything in return, only manifested into joy and happiness of winning EuroLeague titles, Greek titles, beating Olympiacos when we have those rival games. There was a lot of other things that paid him back, right? Not monetarily, but winning the EuroLeague title, winning the
holding that trophy in their arms,
wasn't right? That was his. I felt like that was his payback for the money that he put in, and every time we blessed him with that. I felt that in his mind that the plan that he's putting out with all the money and not getting anything returned is the best plan for him, for the club, and for the fans and everybody else. So, again, to have that deep rooted love for the game of basketball and to not expect anything return, that only speaks, high volumes to the kind of owners that they were and why we were so successful. You know, I tell a lot of people here, there's a couple teams that I worked on. I don't want to mention any names, but their leadership, they wanted leadership to start from the ground up, right? That's never going to happen. I'm sorry. And you're never going to have success. The leadership comes from the top, and it trickles all the way down to the ground level, to the floor. So that's why I felt that we were so successful in Panathinaikos, because we knew we've messed around with Obradovich, which very seldom you would never do. But you knew Thanasio Pavlos would come down there and straighten your ass out. And that's, you didn't want to get to that level, right? Because you didn't want to get to that level. So either you take this message from Obradovich, you do it, or you're going to keep messing around to the point where Pavlos or Thanasi is going to get on you. And at that point, you don't want that. You know what I mean? So I'd rather take the message from Obradovich and move on than, sitting down, taking a real stern message from Thanasi, right? So again, two very special human beings, two individuals that I admire, because again, I think I got to Athens, I was 24 years old. I was a young man, and by the time I left Athens, I was a grown man. So, and I learned a lot of things from Pavlos and Thanasi. I took a lot of family values from those two, and I implemented that into my own family. When I sit down, with wife and kids, and we have our dinner, we're at the table, we're talking about, school, we're talking about their respective sport. And just what's going on in their life. Those are the things that, that I took from Thanasi and Pavlos, but also the Greek culture in general. I had also friends outside of Panathinaikos, and when they invite me to their house on a Sunday and all their family is there and everybody is eating at the table, everybody is conversating about good things, bad things, or whatever it was, I was like, this is something that I want to implement in my own family, so we can sit there and talk about everything, because the way the world is now, I mean, everybody has their phone. You can dive into any kind of world that you want to now, right? And to disconnect from that world and get back into reality is a really big thing for me and my family. So I try to use that every single day.
Wow. That was such a great insight of the lessons that you get. And I'm impressed by what you said about the lessons that you still keep and put in other parts of your life outside of basketball. That's mm-hmm. really amazing for me.
Well, basketball and life has a lot of parallels. Yeah. Trust me. It teaches you how to work with different people. It teaches you how to advise or give the right advice at the right time. So basketball and life has a lot of parallels. And I'm still using a lot of basketball lessons in my life lessons as well. I'm 46 years old. I don't know everything. But every day that I wake up, I'm open-minded and I'm, willing to learn, looking to learn and to get better, every single day.
So coming back to the present EuroLeague, Mike, we talked a little bit about Pana before, but mm-hmm. among like the rest of the competition, the level of the competition, we know you watch it, you follow it. What do you think of that? And which teams are your favorite to extend and progress the run eventually to the Final Four in Berlin?
I mean, well, you see Madrid is at the top. I mean, they're playing lights out. I think they only lost one game in EuroLeague. You
They're
have
very close.
Barcelona right. Yeah, you have Barcelona behind him in second. But, you know, one of my surprises is Virtus, right? They're what,
Yeah.
third, fourth
Virtus
place,
is
something
actually
like that.
second now. Virtus climbed second right now because they beat only
Well,
and Barca lost.
no,
So.
there you have it. So you're seeing different teams be in that top four slot. Like last year, Monaco was that top four slot, right? Freshly new to EuroLeague, but they have the talent, the pieces to the puzzle to play at a high, to play at a high level. But Virtus has been a big surprise for me this year. Of course, Partizan is the hottest team in EuroLeague right now. Now, they didn't start in very well, but they found a groove. They've been shooting the ball very well over the last five, six, seven, eight games. So they've been playing very well. And I know it's an Obradovic team. I played on an Obradovic, but those are one of the teams that I continue to see trending in the right direction from where they started and to where they're going now. You know, Obradovic is pushing those guys through the door to get into a higher seeding, right? To get into one of those top four spots. You know, so I think we're going to see a lot more intense games, a lot more situation nail biters, teams being in third place trying to fight to stay in third. You know, a lot of scenarios that keeps you on the edge of your seat. Like even last season when I used to watch games, I used to be on the edge of my seat. I'm not even on the edge of my seat when I watch NBA games, but I'm on the edge of my seat when I watch EuroLeague games because you know the pressure, you know, like the atmosphere, you know what
What's
these
at
players are
stake?
thinking at stake to a to a certain perspective, right? You know all of it. So
Yeah.
there is times where I am really on the edge of my seat because I can put myself in that position. Like, man, I remember playing this game in front of this crowd 2 minutes ago and we have to execute. I can only imagine what these players are going through right
Deja
now in the in their mind. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You're having a deja vu moment. So again, you know, I haven't caught a lot of games. Like I told you before, like sometime I might have enough time to catch a quarter, maybe sometime a first half, sometime might be a second half. But the Partizan Panathinaikos game was one of the games that I did get a chance to watch from start to finish. And it was a, you know, a very, very good game, you know, for, you know, Panathinaikos did play well. I know they didn't like the result that they got because they ended up losing. But Partizan, you know, they fought and willed their way to victory because they was not playing well throughout that whole game. And
Oh,
even they was losing, you know,
last
late
minute.
in the game. They were losing late in the fourth quarter. They found the way, you know, to get back in the game. So again, every game that I've been watching, it's been thrilling. And as a basketball fan, even though I am a coach, but as a fan, this is what you want to watch. You want to feel like you're a
Definitely.
part of the situation, and every time I watch a EuroLeague game, I feel like I'm a part of that, you know, because the intense situation, my experience of being in it, you know, keeps that intense, you know, burning inside of me. So it's always good, you know, when I can watch the EuroLeague games. And I've told people this million times before, you know, games come on here at 1, 2 o'clock. You know, that's, you know, if I don't go home after shoot around, like I'm in my office right now. I just, you know, Bluetooth that thing right to the TV, sit here and watch the games,
Yeah.
you know. So it's you know, I try to watch as much games as possible because basketball is a worldwide conglomerate now. You can't just shut yourself off to the NBA or to just Europe, right? When I retired, I shut myself off of EuroLeague. I had to disconnect a little bit, and as you start seeing the rise of basketball and how it's connected worldwide, you had to get back into it and embrace, you know, your past time, and also you have to embrace what's going on in into the presence. Like, you know, I told my brother the other day, he was like, you know, I try to stay away from EuroLeague as much as possible. That's a past time for me. You know, I buried that guy a long time ago because I wanted to be looked at as a coach so much. But at the end of the day, you know, what I did over in Europe is so profound. It's so hard to hide and run away from, you
Why
know,
keeping that behind?
your,
I mean, these are great
yeah.
things. These are things that define you. These are things that define Mike Batiste.
And yeah, no doubt, but you know, I really enjoy my time as a player. I'm not going to lie. The success and stuff that I had, don't get me wrong, it does crosses my mind. You know, you think about it for a short second, but I'm so locked into the present and where I'm trying to go as a coach and how I can better myself, how I can better individual player, how I can better the team. So as long as my focus stays on that, I again, like I said, I know I'm moving in the right direction.
And talking about players, back in May, you visited another podcast with a pretty good guest, I would say, pretty good host, I would say, which is Kai Lines. And and you said, if I'm not mistaken, that the top three favorite players to watch for you are Mike James in the EuroLeague, are Mike James, were Mike James, Lorenzo Brown, and Dwayne Bacon. Do you have another top three? Do you have other names in mind when it comes to that?
I like watching Poirier from Madrid, of course. We have Lasor and Panathinaikos. I'm always watch bigs. I mean, that's the natural position that I played. I mean, the moment you turn the TV on, it's just natural to watch who's running the floor, who's setting screen, who's rolling, whatever. But again, there's been a lot of good, you know, guard play as well. I mean, Kostas Lucas has really been doing a good job at Panathinaikos. Of course, Mike James is always going to be at the forefront, the way he scores and his skill set. So there's a lot of guys that I'm watching a little bit more instead of, you know, the three guys that I liked watching last time, you know. And I think it's going to be some more players added on that list. And I, you know, once our season starts to calm down a little bit more here, I'll be able to watch, you know, more EuroLeague games, more complete games, and then I can start adding some more favorite players onto my list. But again, I watch teams, I watch players, and everything that I watch is thrilling, and it has me, you know, on the edge of, you know, my seat. The guys that you like watching, you root for them. You hope that when you watch the game that they don't play a bad game because you feel like you're superstitious and you jinxed everything because you watched their game. But at the end of the day, again, you hope that they're playing well and you support them, you know, whether they play good or bad, because I wasn't always perfect, you know, playing. I had, you know, some okay moments. I had bad moments. You know, again, like we said, more times than not, I succeeded. But knowing what those guys are going through when they go 0 for 4, 0 for 5, they're not shooting well, you can really put yourself into their shoes and help them out a lot from those situations. So rooting for those guys, I hope they stay injury free. And I hope that all the goals that they set out in front of them, whether that's individual team, I hope that they're able to accomplish that.
And talking a little bit about fantasy, fantasy scenario in which Mike Batiste plays in today's EuroLeague, where would it be? And with who as a head coach?
Me now?
Yeah. Who else? Let's say the Mike Batiste of 2009 or 2011.
Yeah.
The peak of your career, perhaps.
Like who would I want to play for right now?
Exactly.
I mean, shit, which team would you fit in better?
Of course. I mean, it's a no-brainer, man. You know, I'm always choosing Obradovic. He's the top of the top. I think any team that he went to and I played under him, I think I will have some form of the same kind of success. But that also depends on the personnel of your team and everything else, because I've also was on a team, which you look on paper, you're like, oh my God, they're going to win a lot of games, but the connection just wasn't there. The leadership just wasn't there. And it turned into something worse than it should have been good. So I'm going to stick to what I know, since I know about this, since I know how he coaches you, how tough-minded he coaches you. I would rather go into a situation that I know about where I can have certain advantages than trying to go to another team and trying to figure things out. Then it takes you about, what, 2, 3, 4 months to figure out the philosophy, rhythm, all this stuff. I would rather go into a situation that I know about. So right from the very first day of practice, preseason game, real season games, I know what I'm doing. So it's going to have to be Obradovic or Etudis, guys that I played under. These guys are still the best at their craft. I know Etudis had the change from Fenerbahce, but we know he's going to find a job soon. But those guys are still at the top of their profession. Even now, as I've been 10 years away from the EuroLeague game, these guys are still at the top of their profession. So those would be the guys that I would want to play for. And if I had to advise certain players that had a choice to choose between an Obradovic or somebody else, you go play for Partizan. You don't go play for somebody else. You take advantage of, you know, the greatest coach of all time. He's going to make you a better player. He's going to make you a better person. And if you don't want to be a better version of yourself from that, then I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Mike, we have just two questions for you, so don't worry. we are wrapping it up soon.
No, don't worry.
The first question I have is, we said it, we started with this. You are considered a pioneer by players like Kyle Hines, for example. Kyle Hines has said many times that you were one of those players he was looking up to when he began his career in EuroLeague. As the one who maybe started this revolution of undersized big men that took over EuroLeague from the mid-zeros and onward, how do you feel about it when your successors, in a way, talk about you with such a praise?
Listen, it's a real honor. Who is not only in his own legacy of what he's done is remarkable, but he's also keeping, you know, my legacy alive as well. Because when I see Kyle Hines play, I see a lot of myself in him, just because, like you said, the undersized center, the way we defend, pick and roll, leadership and everything else, he brings all that stuff to the table. So, of course, I see a lot of myself in him, as the same that he does with me. So, again, like I said, that's a really big honor, because Kyle had to study, you know, some parts of my game to actually know, like, what I'm about, because, you know, we've only really sat down with each other maybe 3, 4, 5 times through our whole lifetime. So for him to become one with me or understand me, he had to watch film on me. And that is a big respect in itself as well. And for somebody to dissect, you know, everything that I did, you can really tell where his IQ is, because he really broke down certain details of my game, the way I ran the floor, the way I screened, the way I communicated coverages to the guards so they, you know, wouldn't get hit on a screen. That's big, big time respect. And again, you see other guys like a Brian Dunstan, Alex Tyus, certain little small ball five guys, Dante Hall down there in Monaco. You see a lot of undersized guys that have similarities just like you. But you know, at the end of the day, like I said, I'm the originator, the OG in it. So I'm always choose myself over anybody. That's just what it is. I'm pretty sure those guys that choose themselves over anybody, how it should be. That's, you know, respect to that. But at the end of the day, to see where the undersized big started, and now to see where it's going, right? It is still going now. In Europe, it puts a big smile on my face. But at the end of the day, I'm very thrilled and happy for the guys who are playing in it now, enhancing the small ball undersized center, but also developing other things in their game. So when their time is done, they're talking about what he did for the game. Never tell them, oh, you know, he took this from Mike Batiste. No, this is his legacy. When he walks out the door, this is what you're going to remember, and this is what you're going to talk about.
So, Mike, to go full circle now, to make the connection Europe and the NBA, please tell us which players from the EuroLeague, or maybe European basketball in general right now, you could drop on an NBA team and they would instantly deliver.
Instantly deliver? Oh, yeah.
No, that's easy, I know, but...
That's tough. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, you look at a lot of EuroLeague rosters right now, a lot of guys have NBA experience, right? Whether they went there first, came to Europe, or started in Europe, went to the NBA, and came back. When you look at that Real Madrid team, right? When you look at Real Madrid's team, they have an NBA roster, right? I believe that team can really, you can plug them into this association right now, and they will give a lot of teams in the NBA everything that they got. And what I mean by that,
you believe that? Wow, that's impressive.
Oh yeah, like yeah. I don't really think it'll be a blowout by any measure. I think teams are really going to have to dig in deep. They're going to have to execute. They're going to have to mentally get ready for a grind out type of game and winning in the last 5 or 6 minutes. When you see Fernandez, Lure, Rodriguez, Poirier, Tavares, like these guys all have NBA experience. So to put them on this platform, I think that all those guys will accept that challenge and they will do their best that they can. I mean, of course, you know, Madrid beats, you know, Dallas in a friendly game and Madrid, I mean, you can't really put too much on that. But at the end of the day, I believe that, you know, if they was to play in the NBA, I really believe that they can win some games here. And I think a lot of, you know, fans here in the NBA will really understand, number one, Madrid's organization, but also European basketball. You know, it's played at such a different pace. They execute differently. A lot of high IQ fundamental skill set players are playing in EuroLeague. Those are the guys that I feel that you can plug into an NBA system and they will provide everything that they need because, you know, guys get drafted here so young and early and their game is not fully developed, but we give them the resources to develop those skills, whether they are full time on the roster with us all year or they go into the G League and they work on their craft there. So it's very, very, like very, very small when we see certain teams that can compete with NBA teams, but I know Madrid is one of them. Barcelona is probably another one too as well. But the guys who has the high IQ, the guys who has a high level fundamentals and the guys who has a really good skill set are the ones that are going to survive in the NBA. And honestly, that those are going to be more European players. Their games are developed way faster than what we develop these guys over here in America. So from that perspective, you're going to see way more fundamentally sound players. You're going to see guys with high level skill sets. And you're also going to see guys play the game from an IQ standpoint that a lot of people here don't really understand the mind game of basketball. And tonight, you're going to see one of the best high-level IQ in Nikola Jokic, right? Because every defense you throw at him, he has an option for it. So, you know, we really have to be really, really good. We have to be in our positions early. We cannot be late when he kicks the ball out, and we have to rotate. We cannot be late. And we have to, you know, again, like I said, do different things to make him think. But when you make him think, you're also helping one of his strongest attributes. So, again, we'll be careful with that. But again, those guys, the Jokic's of the world, with the fundamentals, the skill set, IQ, those are the guys that can come here into the NBA right away and play. And for me personally, those are the guys that I look for, you know what I mean? Who can actually come in, plug and play, will accept their role, will be a star in their role, and won't give us no problems on the court, in the locker room, and it's constantly going to be about winning, you know? So those are the guys that I look after. Hopefully we can get those type of guys here on this roster. We do have some of those guys now, but the more the merrier, the more guys that you can get with a high level IQ, the better your team would be, the better your roster would be. And that's the luxury that, you know, myself and my teammates had at Panathinaikos, right? Yeah, we were very good players, but I think our IQ really separated us from the pack. We was able to feel the game out in the first quarter, make adjustments in that first quarter. If I was guarding somebody a certain way that we game plan, but I feel that it should be different, I would run right to Obradovic and say, let me guard him this way. And maybe Obradovic would be with it. Maybe he not be with it. Or maybe we might adjust to that situation at halftime. So, A lot of good things are coming from Europe. I'm hoping more guys are coming over here into the association.
We do not. Only helps. Seriously, please. I mean, this summer we received the blow. Mitic, Vezenkov, Exum. I mean, enough. Please, NBA. Don't do it.
Listen. I don't wish that either, but it's tough. I mean, the guys understands the, you know, they understand the economics of the NBA. Right, the money is getting higher and higher each year. Yeah. The salary cap is getting higher each year. So I think there's a level of comfort and stability when you know about the economics, how the money is going. You're getting paid all the time. There's no messing around with that. There's only one thing, and that's basketball. you know, and if you can get your mind wrapped around the game for 6, 7, 8 months, those are the guys who are going to win. Those are the guys who are going to get better. Those are the guys who are going to evolve into a special player, and hopefully they will have longevity within their career.
Mike Batiste, ladies and gentlemen, you know, as dominant as he was in the player, as illuminating and really great, talkative in a great way, and teaching us things right now. Thank you so much for this conversation, Mike. This trip down memory lane with Panathinaikos, this, you know, having hearing you, your insight on all things basketball, it was amazing.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. You know, you guys know how to get a hold of me anytime you want to do it again. I'm here for you guys. So stay blessed. Tell everybody in Athens hello. But I hope to see you.
You're gonna tell them yourself.
Well, again, like I said, hopefully I'll be able to tell them, you know, myself in person. I'm really hoping Panathinaikos can make it to the playoffs so I can get up over there. Also plan to go to the Final Four in Germany as well. You know, I have family over in Germany. My father's brother, you know, married a German woman, has family over there, so they still reside over there. So to kind of be two birds at one stone, to see basketball and also see family as well, is something that I'm planning. So hopefully all this all to work out.
Because we know what happened in 2009. So
yeah, but listen, also, you know, when you go to these Final Fours, you're so disciplined. You're not worried about whatever goes on, right? But then, you know, you talk to your mom, family, wife, and everybody else. Oh, we're taking a bike ride around the city. Oh, and we're doing all this stuff. And and as much as you want to be with them, you can't, because you have this obligation to, you know, and this goal that you set out for yourself. So you have to sacrifice that and put that on the back burner. But now, if I do get that chance to go, hopefully I can be able to do the sightseeing and all the stuff that I couldn't do as a player. Hopefully I can do now and just enjoy it. Exactly. You know, as a player, you have all this anxiety, you know, running through your system, you're nervous and this, the butterflies in the stomach, you know, you're ready to release that. And now hopefully, again, like you said, I don't have to be in those intense situations. I can just enjoy the festivities.
Well, we hope we will definitely enjoy the festivities at the Final Four this season. And we hope we see you there, Mike. Now to our viewers and our listeners, you can find us always. You can find this episode on YouTube, and on Spotify, and other platforms from Mike Batiste, European basketball legend. Cesare Milanti, thank you again.
Thank you, Antonis, and thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone, and good luck, Mike, with the Raptors, with the season, and see you at the Final Four.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. See you guys soon, man. It's been a pleasure to talk to you guys soon.
And Merry Christmas, more importantly. We forgot the most important thing. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year yet, because we will be with you next week as well. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. Thank you. Take care. Bye.